Hello, everyone. I'm Ronnie McBrayer, and I thank you for finding my podcast. Here you will find my regular talks, the occasional interview, hopefully a little light from the Enneagram time to time, and hear conversations with friends on the ever-changing, ever-evolving nature of faith. If you are burned out on religion, to quote Eugene Peterson's marvelous paraphrase, but your faith is still important to you, or if you consider yourself a spiritual exile with no real place of belief to call home, then I have you especially in mind, and I hope you'll stick around.
It is with great rejoicing and anticipation that I must tell you something. As soon as we say amen here today, Garrett McHugh and myself are darting out this side door, grabbing our luggage, and boarding a plane for Dublin, Ireland. Yeah. Come on. And Dundrum, and Downpatrick, and Belfast, and Donegal, and Sligo, and Westport, and Galway, and Slane. And the cliffs of Moher, and the mountains of Mourne, and Newcastle, and we'll be back in a week. It's not a vacation, obviously. It won't be very restful, but it does have purpose. Slide, please. In 2025, we will be leading a pilgrimage to Ireland for all those who wish to travel following in the steps of St. Patrick and exploring the deep spirituality of Celtic Christianity. This is going to be epic. Now, pray for Garrett. He has a bad gallbladder, we think. But he bought travel insurance, and I will leave him behind should he fall. We are going to locate some accommodations, check in on some holy sites, make travel arrangements for a larger group, lay the necessary groundwork for you to join us. And I hope you will join us. It will be a pilgrimage in the true sense of that meaning. Pilgrimages are spiritual journeys, not trips by tourists going sightseeing. Pilgrimages are explorations both within and without. Pilgrimages have as a goal finding wisdom, enlightenment, transcendence even, not necessarily finding the best place for a selfie or the restaurant that sells the most tasty fish and chips. But be it the Holy Land in the steps of Jesus, be it across Asia Minor or Southern Europe in the steps of St. Paul, be it along the Camino walking the way of St. James across the trails of Spain or Portugal to the sea, the history of Christian pilgrimage is a long one. You get yourself physically and mentally out of your place. You get out of yourself and your routine, and you reattach to a different place. You take in the land, the food, the people, the culture, the language of that place that maybe once cradled our Lord or the saints or simply bore all of our spiritual ancestors who came before us. A pilgrimage is a spiritual practice. It is a seeking after God. And those in the Irish Celtic tradition speak of thin places. Those locations and experiences where it seems like the distance between heaven and earth is almost erased. They come so close to each other that they touch. And to be there in a thin place, to come in contact with that, is life-changing. And speaking of life-changing, I must tell you something else this morning. Our son, Joshua Bryce McBrayer, and our daughter-in-law, Leslie Sari Lopez Moreno, are expecting their first baby. Which will make Cindy and I grandparents this summer. My Gaelic predecessors could have never anticipated African, Mexican, and Spanish DNA entering the family ancestry tree, but that's what's going to happen. Yet I think they would have handled it just fine. You see, my Scot-Irish family had a motto all the way back to the 14th century, and here it is on my family coat of arms. In defiance. Stick it to the man. Now, what were they defying? What had them so antagonistically bothered? Well, they were Scottish. And that's a normal state of being, I think. But in their time, they were defying the bloody English. Apologies. Those war-making colonizers, forever trying to get north of the Solway Firth, always trying to take what wasn't theirs. My Scot ancestors were Lowland Scots from the borderlands, way down south at Dumfries, but they were Scots. And don't give the English or the monarchy an inch, was their mindset, in defiance. But then, James, King of Scotland, pulled off the most magical political trick. He became king over all of England and Scotland, rode south and took the crown. Now the man was our man. What to do? Well, no worries. King James packed up the McBrayers and sent them to Northern Ireland in 1605 to knock heads with the Irish. And the family motto was as applicable then as ever. And then on to the Revolutionary War and what would become the United States. My ancestors came. They were rebels in the Civil War. In defiance, has held up more or less for the last 700 years. Stick it to the man. And if you don't know that phrase, stick it to the man, it's a phrase as southern as bless your heart. The man was slang used by enslaved African Americans, code speak for authority. If you could stick it to the man, you were committing an act of resistance against your master or your slave holder. Don't let the oppressor have his way. And then Paul Newman came along in Cool Hand Luke in the 1960s and used the man to describe the police and the guards at his deep South Florida work prison that he was in. And the counterculture of the 1960s picked it up and it's been around ever since. And I want to talk to you today about sticking it to the man, about defiance, about resistance, about not going gently into that good night. This is the other half of the equation from last week. Reinhold Niebuhr wrote, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. We talked about that last week. And he also said, and grant me the courage to change the things I can. That's today. Viktor Frankl's most quoted words, everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of human freedoms. To choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances. If possible, we change our fate. If necessary, we willingly accept it. What can be overcome must be overcome. What cannot be overcome must be accepted. Today, I want you to be infused with holy, scrappy, heavenly resistance. I want you to leave here today spilling over with God-given chutzpah. Not arrogance, not violence, not ego or attitude, but humble, hopeful, resilient defiance. What can be overcome in your life must be overcome. God grant me the courage to change the things I can change. Stick it to the man, man. This is the last talk in this series from the book of Ecclesiastes, using Viktor Frankl's life and his writings as commentary. And the biblical text, as you heard, is just a small sampling of verses that in many ways is more of the same. The writer of Ecclesiastes is an old, cynical, jaded, fault-finding grump. Look up curmudgeon in the dictionary. You'll see a picture of him there. But he is not without redemption. There's so many flashes of brilliance and wisdom. We've heard in taking these words to heart, his cynicism has at least opened his eyes and made him honest. And beneath that thick layer of pessimistic barnacle is hope and wisdom and meaning. And I think that is the case exactly in Ecclesiastes, where we have read today. What he says is true to the bone and the marrow, and I can summarize it with one sentence. There are no participation trophies in this life. You know what a participation trophy is? It's what you give a 5-year-old soccer player. Everybody gets a trophy for being on the team, for trying. Everyone is a winner. And when you are 5 years old, that's how it should be. But if you're 50 and looking for a trophy just for showing up to do what was already expected of you, then it is way past time for you to grow up. You can be the fastest runner and still lose. You can be the strongest and the best equipped and go down in flames. You might be the smartest person in the room and be completely ignored or never make more than minimum wage. You might be the wisest of sages, the most beautiful of contestants, the most skilled of technicians, the most savvy of investors, and someone dumber, uglier, stupider, and more reckless might beat you. And there will be nothing you can do about it except one thing, and it's not polish your participation trophy. The only thing you can do is keep after it. You meet the demands that life has placed on you, win or lose. You finish the drill. You do the job. And just because it's tough doesn't mean it isn't worth it. In fact, because it is tough makes it worth it and gives it meaning. There is a world of difference between surrendering to what you can do nothing about and pressing on with those things you can, should, and must do something about. There is a world of difference between quitting and finishing, between throwing up your hands and doing nothing, and throwing yourself into life and doing something. You might not win. Your success, as the Ecclesiastes writer says, may be the luck of the draw, being in the right place at the right time. And yes, bad luck will find you. Sudden and unpredictable calamities are bound to fall upon you. And of course, one blooming idiot can come along and cost you everything. But you try, even if you die trying. Cool Hand Luke, let me return to him. Here's his beautiful face. Paul Newman. Cool Hand Luke and Dragline, played by George Kennedy, for which he won an Oscar, are in a Florida prison, a work camp, a chain gang. Luke is a decorated World War II vet. His crime? He destroyed a couple of parking meters after drinking too much. His sentence to labor for years in the Florida sun is a cruel one. He defies the man with a smile on his face and sweat on his brow. He tries to escape to attend his mother's funeral. They won't let him go. He is locked in the box, a hole in the ground, fitted with leg irons. He tries to escape again. The guards beat him, make him dig his own grave and refill it over and over again. The captain telling him, if you run again, I'll kill you. Right after saying, what we have here is a failure to communicate. And just when they think they have finally broken him, and it appears so, he escapes one more time. Luke is on the lam. He ends up here in this rickety old wooden church. It's dark, late at night, and raining. He knows this is his last run. There's no way he's ever going back. He finds a pew and decides to talk to God. He calls God, old man. Hey, old man, speaking to the rafters. Are you home tonight? Well, if you can spare a minute, it's about time we had ourselves a little talk. Look, old man, I know I'm a pretty evil feller who killed people in the war, and I got drunk and chewed up municipal property and the like. And I admit I ain't got no call to ask for much. But even so, you ain't dealt me no cards in a long time. It's beginning to look like you got it fixed so I can never win. Now, you made me what I am. Just where am I supposed to fit in? When does it end? What you got in mind for me? What do I do now? He gets down on his knees, hands together like a child, and he says, "I'm on my hands and knees asking." Luke, looking up at the rafters, nothing but silence, the rain falling on the tin, and he says, "Yeah, that's what I thought. I guess I'm pretty tough to deal with, a hard case. I'll have to find my own way." And when he says that, at that moment, the police and the bosses from the work camp arrive. And Luke looks back up at the ceiling with that smile, and he says, "Is that your answer, old man? Well, I guess you're a hard case, too." He steps to the window. He looks at his would-be captors and says, "Well, I guess what we have here is a failure to communicate." And the captain keeps his deadly promise, and he's shot where he stands. And they carry him away where obviously he will die with a smile on his face. No divine intervention, no answers, nothing about it being fair, but he lived in defiance. Clarence Jordan, a hero of mine, Georgia farmer, theologian, said this: "Faith is living your life in spite of the consequences." In spite of the consequences. In one of Viktor Frankl's books, he talks about having to dig a trench at one of the concentration camps in which he was held. It was 0-degree weather, no gloves, no socks, the thinnest of clothes. The ground is frozen solid. By this time in his trials, he is weak. He is emaciated. The guard is watching him try to work, and the insults begin. The guard says to him, "You pig, I have been watching you this whole time. I'm going to teach you how to work. You wait till you're digging dirt with your teeth. You'll die like an animal. I'll finish you off. You've never done a stroke of work in your life. What were you in the other world, swine? A businessman?" Frankl answered quietly, "I was a doctor." And the guard laughed at him. "A doctor? I bet you took money from a lot of people." And something snapped in Frankl at that moment. And he knew it was dangerous, and he knew it just might cost him his life, but he could not stop himself. This is what he said: "As it happens, I did most of my work for no money at all, at clinics for the poor. But here, I must listen to you. Judge my life, who has so little idea of it. A man so vulgar and brutal that the nurse in the outpatient ward in my hospital would not even have admitted you into the waiting room." Frankl has nothing more to add to the story because he was immediately beat senseless. He did survive, but there was something about the indignity of that one moment that required him, demanded him to stand on principle, to resist, to defy in the only way that he could, regardless of the consequences and with no violence in his heart or his hand. That's courage. And we have, of course, another example. It's been all over your television. The Russian dissident and opposition leader, Alexei Navalny. He died in recent days while a political prisoner in a Siberian penal camp. And this is after multiple attempts on his life, sabotage, arrests. He appears on prison camera before a judge on February 15th, looking well and healthy, smiling like Cool Hand Luke. And he was dead within 24 hours. And if you know Russian oligarchy, if you know the oppressor of the Russian people, this was no surprise, and it was no surprise to Navalny or his family. He was treated in Germany after being poisoned by a deadly nerve agent. He recovered, and on January 17th, 2021, returned to Russia, knowing that he would be arrested, knowing that he would likely be murdered. Why did he return? He said, "I want Russia to reach its potential. I want fairness. I want us to have normal health care. I want to see men live long enough to retire. I want people to be able to get an education. I don't want to give up on either my country or my beliefs. I cannot betray either the first or the second. If your beliefs are worth something, you make sacrifices." And then this letter to his wife: "Zonia, Everything is okay. History is happening. Russia is going through it, and we are coming along. We'll make it, probably. I am all right. I have no regrets. And you shouldn't either. And you shouldn't worry. Everything will be all right, and even if it isn't, we'll have the consolation of having lived honest lives. And that is my final invitation to you in this series of talks. Are you living an honest life? I know you're not stealing from your employer or skimming off the till. If you are, stop that. Are you living purposefully? Are you wringing meaning from life? Instead of aiming at the lower targets like success or financial gain, even happiness. But being happy, genuinely happy, is a byproduct of finding true meaning. Your work, your unique experience as a human being, who and what you love, your attitude, sometimes in surrender, sometimes sticking it to the man in defiance, even if you do not win. It is an invitation to live an honest life surrounded by all that is dishonest, sometimes cruel, and perpetually unfair. A quote from the Odyssey is my prayer for you today, strange as that might sound. Odysseus, the enduring hero, is just trying to get home. Fighting the gods and the mythical creatures of old, the weather and the sea, he's in a tiny little boat like all of us. He's threatened by the waves that crush him. And he rallies himself in the storm, and speaking something that sounds almost like scripture, he says this: "Afar off, my eyes behold the land promised to me. And woe be to me should I abandon my ship. As long as the timbers hold firm in their fastenings, so long will I remain. I will stay with it and endure. And if the waves take my oars, and should the heaving sea shake my raft to pieces, then I will swim, as there is no other way." May God grant all of us such courage to live honest, hopeful lives in a dangerous, unpredictable world.